Josh Easton here, Israel Uncensored, and the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. It is Monday, October 26, 2020, the 8th of Mar Cheshvan 5781. Hope you are well in your part of the world. I am broadcasting this morning from just outside the walls of the Old City of Jerusalem on another beautiful day here in Israel, the Holy Land. Hope you're safe. Hope you're healthy. Don't forget, you can always get in touch with me during the week. Josh at thelandofisrael.com. On Facebook, it's Joshua Haston, or Josh Haston Israel Advocacy and Journalism. On Twitter at Josh Haston, and now on Instagram as well. The top story in Israel over the last couple of days: Sudan has agreed to normalize ties with the Jewish state and agreed to make peace. This announced by U.S. President Donald Trump this past Friday, reported here by JNS News. The move follows the White House announcement that Trump has informed Congress of his intent to remove Sudan from the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism, following Khartoum's agreement to pay $335 million in compensation to victims of the al-Qaeda attacks on U.S. embassies in Kenya, in Tanzania in 1998, and on the USS Cole in 2000, attacks that American courts have ruled Sudan aided and abetted. So another country has agreed to normalization with the state of Israel, the third to do so over the course of the past month. As reported by Yisrael Hayom, Israel hailed this new era in its relations with the Arab world. After the announcement of the normalization of Sudan, the Palestinians, those Arabs living under the PA, their leadership said the agreement was a new stab in the back. This is a new era of peace, a peace that is expanding with other Arab countries, three of them in recent weeks, Prime Minister Netanyahu said in a video statement, and the significance of this peace deal, as Netanyahu pointed out, saying that in Khartoum, the capital of Sudan, the three principles of the Arab League were adopted in 1967. No peace with Israel, no recognition of Israel, and no negotiations with Israel. Whereas today, it's yes to peace with Israel, yes to recognition of Israel, and to normalization with Israel, the prime minister exclaimed. Netanyahu tweeted about the deal, including in Arabic, and thanked U.S. President Donald Trump for mediating the accord. He said Israeli and Sudanese delegations would soon meet to discuss cooperation in areas including agriculture and trade. Jewish groups lauded the historic peace treaty. And as I said before, Palestinian authorities slammed the deal, condemning it, rejecting it. They reject any normalization between Arab countries and Israel. One official, Wazid Abu Yosef, said that Sudan joining others who normalized ties with the state of Israel are adding to the occupation, as he says. They represent a stab in the back of the Palestinian people and a betrayal of the just Palestinian cause. What is the just Palestinian cause? He means the destruction of the state of Israel. So as more Arab countries sign these normalization deals, the Palestinian Authority realizes that less countries are committed to destroying Israel, which is what is the goal of not only Hamas or Islamic Jihad or the PFLP or these other groups. The Palestinian Authority, the PLO, Fatah, their goal remains the destruction of the state of Israel, just using different strategies. That is why they are so upset. That is why they condemn any of these normalization deals, because it is against what he says. It is against their cause. So all those who still believe that Israel is isolated, I've said it before, following other agreements, anybody who thinks that Israel remains isolated, that is less and less the case as the days and weeks go by. More countries willing openly to recognize that they would like normalization with the Jewish state of Israel. One by one, we are waking up to this new reality. So there you have it. There you have it, even with the haters out there. So that was top story over the last couple of days. We'll get to other news here as well. The Jerusalem Post reported yesterday that the Israeli military launched a large-scale, multi-front exercise on Sunday, simulating war with Hezbollah in Lebanon. So even with these peace deals, we still have enemies at our borders. We have enemies within our country. But the IDF is doing what they can to be prepared for whatever comes next. Dubbed Lethal Arrow, the multi-day general staff drill will see thousands of troops from various branches of the military, including Air Force, Navy, ground forces, and intelligence, all gathering to prepare to improve the IDF's capabilities with the looming Hezbollah threat in and emanating from Lebanon, and of course all the other Iranian proxies surrounding the Jewish state. At the same time, I don't know why it took so long, or I don't know why it's taking so long for all countries to do what Guatemala and Estonia did the other day, but Israel Hayom also reports Guatemala on Friday designated Hezbollah as a terrorist organization. The designation includes all of the Iranian-backed Shia group's branches. So we're talking about the military branch, the political branch, and while you and I may know there's no difference, they're all one and the same, you have certain countries who are only willing to condemn the so-called military, or in reality, terrorist branch, while they're also willing to accept the so-called political branch as legitimate. People need to realize they are one and the same. They have the same goal. Just because the so-called political branch isn't actually, you know, pressing the trigger, that doesn't mean that they are not equally culpable in the acts of these terror organizations. And here we're talking about Hezbollah. So, but this is a step in the positive, a step in the right direction. Guatemala and Estonia also announcing it too has labeled Hezbollah as a terrorist group. Sudan, Israel's latest partner in peace, is also considering designating Hezbollah as a terrorist group, reported by Al Arabiya. Foreign Minister Gabi Ashkenazi congratulated the Guatemalan government, he said, and quote, my colleague, Foreign Minister Pedro Rolo, on joining this recognition, I call on more states in Latin America to fight terrorism carried out by Hezbollah all over the world. This latest development makes Guatemala the eighth country to designate Hezbollah as a terrorist group in 2020. Again, I'm not sure why we don't have 100 countries or 150 countries recognizing Hezbollah as a terror organization, but let's be happy right now that we have at least eight, and now Estonia, Guatemala added to that mix. Every country around the world should step up and recognize Hezbollah for who they are. There was an incident on Saturday in Judea and Samaria, just north of Ramallah. The IDF, according to the Jerusalem Post, responded to reports about rocks being thrown at Israeli vehicles, which happens on a daily basis, by the way, if you're not aware. 5, 10, 15 rock attacks, firebomb attacks on a daily basis. IDF forces arrived at the site of the rock throwing north of Ramallah and found two Arab suspects who began running from the scene. According to this report, it seems that as the two Arabs were running away from the IDF soldiers, one of the suspects lost consciousness, fainted, injured his head, and died. The IDF says he was not hit by IDF soldiers. The PA media claimed that this young man was shot, was killed by IDF forces after some sort of car chase. They have a whole different version of the story, okay? The Palestinian Wafa news agency reported he was beaten by security forces. Some say he was shot. But from what we know, these were two terrorists who were throwing rocks, trying to murder Jews. One of them ran away. Something happened, lost consciousness, fell, hit his head, and died. Okay, so the official Palestinian Authority, official media outlets, automatically making up stories, saying the IDF shot him. But you know what? At the end of the day, I'll be honest with you. If the IDF had, in fact, shot this person who was trying to murder Jews, then that's what he deserved. But it didn't happen here, according to the report. Nevertheless, it doesn't matter what it is. An IDF soldier could be helping an old woman, an Arab woman, across the street, and some phony Pollywood photographer or videographer would take that and claim that the IDF soldier was beating the woman. We see this all the time, the propaganda emanating from the official Palestinian Authority news outlets and propagandists. We see it time and time again, but it looks like here that this is just another phony report trying to incite against the IDF and trying to incite against the state of Israel. Switching gears here, I don't know if you saw this video yet, but if you haven't, you have to check out Ami Horowitz's latest short film. Ami Horowitz, a journalist in the States who does great work, tells the truth about a lot of different issues. He's interviewed like top terrorists who admit what their true goal is. He gets people to say things on the record for his interviews. In his recent short film, this reported by JNS, and I watched the video, Ami Horowitz interviews leaders of the If Not Now organization. If you're not familiar, If Not Now, claiming to be a Jewish progressive human rights group. But in reality here, the video exposes the organization as a hate group that supports terrorists and partners with anti-Semites. This is what Ami Horowitz said after putting together this short film. He shows how the group lures in young people with a message of fighting against injustice. Injustice, of course, against the Arabs because of the atrocities committed by Israel. That's what the group tries to, they try to create that narrative. They distort reality to fit their warped worldview, said Horowitz. He exposes its true mission, which is to demonize Israel and move the Jewish community away, move the community away from its support of the Jewish state. That is really what If Not Now is. If you go to their Twitter feed or any of their social media, you can see this is a group that is completely radicalized. They are against Israel. Some of them have said the mourner's prayer Kaddish. There are videos of this. It also included in Ami's video, Kaddish for Hamas terrorists who try to murder Israelis, try to murder Jews. They're trying to get kids off of birthright. It's just a horrible organization disguised as a human rights organization. They have partnered, you can see it in the video, they have partnered with some of the most anti-Semitic and anti-Israel characters and groups in the U.S., proudly partnering with these groups, okay? Go check out Ami Horowitz's video. You can get a link on JNS. You can see it. This article published October 22nd, and there's a link there to Ami Horowitz's video. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube and other places as well. If you are unfamiliar with If Not Now, unfamiliar with their tactics, unfamiliar with their views, okay, they're certainly not a pro-Israel organization, and they're not a pro-Jewish organization. Anybody who says Kaddish for Hamas terrorists is absolutely just not even like on the spectrum. You know, there are organizations which are, you know, pro-Israel and may have a different opinion than myself. They may be more to the center or more to the left, if you want to, and I hate defining it in terms of left, right, and center, but this is an anti-Israel, anti-Jewish organization. And unfortunately, you have young Jewish college students who have fallen for their charm and have fallen for their propaganda of being a human rights group, a human rights organization, and are acting on their behalf, protesting birthright and joining all these rallies against Israel and really against the Jewish people. So well done there, Ami Horowitz. Here's some positive news. Also reported by JNS, U.S. President Donald Trump may soon declare that several prominent international NGOs, including Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and Oxfam, are in fact anti-Semitic organizations, Politico reported the other day. One congressional aide told Politico that U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is pushing for the declaration. So, you know, on the surface, why would it make sense? Why would Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and the others be considered anti-Semitic? These organizations hold Israel to a different standard. Those who hold to Israel to a different standard, by definition, are anti-Semitic organizations. Again, they another set of groups here that claim to stand up for human rights, yet they put Israel under the microscope and disproportionately use their time, effort, and resources to go after the Jewish state. Where are they in terms of combating Iran or terror groups or whatnot? They don't have time for that, really. Here and there, you know, they'll send something out, but the majority of, it's like the UN Human Rights Council and the Security Council and this General Assembly that disproportionately focuses it on Israel. These organizations do the same, and it would be unbelievable if they are labeled to be anti-Semitic organizations, because really that's what they are. And they'll deny it, and they'll say it's not true, and they'll claim, of course, we're not anti-Semites, and they'll say, well, a lot of us are Jews, and they'll do all this other stuff, and they'll pretend that they are just do-gooders, and it's fair to criticize Israel, right? That's what they'll say. It's fair. We can criticize Israel, yeah, but when you hold Israel to a different standard, when you use, 75% of your resources to demonize Israel, that is anti-Semitism by definition. So I'm very hopeful that President Trump stays in office long enough to go through with this and have these organizations, again, posing as human rights organizations, but really committed to harming the state of Israel. Hopefully they will be labeled as anti-Semitic organizations. That would be unbelievable. That would be amazing. And they're also, by the way, these groups, according to this report, they're also proponents of the BDS movement. If that doesn't tell you who they really are, then I don't know what does. We're going to finish this segment here with some positive news. First of all, coronavirus in Israel, our numbers are going down. Things are starting to open up here, but this was interesting. The Jerusalem Post yesterday, Mayan Hoffman, who's been covering coronavirus throughout, reported that there is a new product out there, which is unbelievable. It's an Israeli company that has now brought hand washing into the 21st century. Soapy is the name of the company. It has turned the sink into a high-tech device to help ensure that even in the most important environments, such as hospitals and schools, hands get really clean. The company offers AI-enhanced, internet-connected, eco-friendly hygiene microstations that help users wash their hands according to the WHO standards. With every use, the system offers step-by-step guidance for an optimal wash, tracking how well you have done, and it lets you know in real time. System provides instant, unlimited warm water and hand soap using less water than a regular sink. These soapy sinks offer user recognition, temperature measurement, and instant high temperature notifications, essential during the age of coronavirus. So it tells you how well you're washing your hands, if your hands are clean enough. They've already installed these in the Sheba Medical Center. This is what the article reports. They put the system in, and as I said, at the same time, the thing can read your temperature. So you have a sink which tells you if you're washing your hands well enough and detects if, God forbid, you are sick. Unbelievable. Another Israeli invention doing great, and hopefully this will make its way around the world. Soapy, check them out. And to you BDS haters out there, don't use Soapy. It's made in Israel. So if you have it in your local hospital, stay away from this device. It was made by Jews, made by Israel. You BDS haters, you should not use. Don't be hypocrites now. don't use this Israeli technology, which is doing wonders and actually saving lives. That's what it's doing here in the age of Corona. So haters, be warned, this product is made in Israel. And finally here, Israel yesterday marked Aliyah Day, that is Immigration to Israel Day, honoring diaspora Jews who chose to bind their fate with Israel and come home to the Jewish state. This is a report by Yisrael Hayom. According to the Immigration Absorption Ministry and the Jewish Agency, 35,586 Aliyah files were opened in 2020 so far, with a 133% spike in requests from English-speaking countries. So there's a high interest in Aliyah and immigration. 102% rise in requests from French-speaking countries, 31% increase from Latin American countries. Since January, 15,162 Jews immigrated to Israel. These are numbers for 2020. The most, it says here, from Russia, with 5,000 new immigrants from Russia, 2,000 from the Ukraine and the United States each, 1,700 French Jews, and a lot of other statistics in this report. But, you know, the reason we celebrate Aliyah Day, Immigration to Israel Day, this week is because of the upcoming weekly Torah portion, the Parshat HaShavua, Lech Lecha, Avraham, of course, being the first Zionist. That's how I identify Avraham, picking up everything, leaving his family behind, leaving his house, leaving his lifestyle, leaving everything, and coming home to the Jewish state of Israel, Avraham. In this week's Torah portion, we'll read about it, please God, on Shabbat morning. We read about it this morning, Monday morning, and we'll read it Thursday, and then the full Parsha on Shabbat. Avraham being the first Zionist, making Aliyah to Israel. Let's hope the trend continues and more people will come home to Israel. It's amazing that there is such an increase in people who have contacted, whether Nefesh B'Nefesh or the Jewish agency, asking about making Aliyah. Hopefully, all of those who are asking will come home sooner rather than later, and hopefully they're not running from anti-Semitism. That is an acceptable reason to come home, but hopefully people are doing so just because they want to come and tie their fate to the Jews of the state of Israel here in the land of Israel. And that's going to do it for this segment. Coming back with more, this is Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. My name is Josh Hasten. Shout out to Benjamin Bresky, engineer extraordinaire, and Tabitha Epstein for everything she does behind the scenes, and we'll be right back.
Join the Land of Israel Network Fellowship. Sign up today and join the revolution, inviting the world to learn Torah from Judea with Jeremy Gimpel and Ari Abramowitz.
We may come up short on becoming the person we want to be, but that's not the point. Sukkot is telling us that happiness is progress. Wandering aimlessly through a meaningless life is a recipe for suffering. What could be worse than walking around the desert for absolutely nothing? But as long as we are walking toward the land of Israel, every step has purpose.
For more information, visit thelandofisrael.com/fellowship.
And we are back. Josh Hasten here, Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. It is Monday, the 26th of October, 2020, the 8th of Cheshvan 5781. And this portion of the show is also being streamed live on Facebook via Zoom. If you're watching, go back and listen to the first part of the show. It's going to be up in just a few hours on my Facebook page, on the Land of Israel Network, and of course on SoundCloud, iTunes, and everywhere else. My guest during this segment, it's a true honor to have a good friend on the program today, Dan Diker, director of the Project on Political Warfare at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. He joins us on Zoom. Dan, thanks so much. Hope you're doing well.
Doing well, Josh. In the bunker, in the Corona bunker, along with the rest of the world.
You've been hanging out from your home office doing your thing most of the time?
Actually, the truth is we've been in the office in Jerusalem, and But sometimes it's easier to do these terrific interviews from the laptop right at home before going in. So here we are together trying to get our arms around this complicated region called the Middle East, North Africa, and the Red Sea area.
Yeah, we have a lot of news this week here, and the main subject in Israel, just a few days ago, Israel signing a normalization deal with the Sudan, with, of course, the United States mediating that agreement, President Trump and his staff just the other day. I want to ask you, first question, Dan, what are the ramifications of the deal with Sudan? And if you can't compare it to Israel's other two normalization deals with the UAE and Bahrain, how is this agreement similar? How is it different?
Well, Josh, generally, the Middle East is coming out of the closet, as it were, in the sense that we see a real revolution going on among the African Middle Eastern states regarding Israel. From it's very symbolic that Sudan has agreed in principle to move forward with normalization in Israel, because if you, as you remember, I don't think you were around then, you were young, if you were a young buck, but in September the 1st, 1967, I was a very young child. And it's in September 1967 in Khartoum, in the capital of Sudan, the Arab League met and issued the famous or the infamous three no's to Israel after Israel came into the territories of Judea and Samaria, West Bank, Gaza, Sinai, and the Golan. The Arab League said the resounding three no's: no negotiations, no recognition, no peace with Israel. And here in 2020, the place where it all happened in 67 is saying now yes, yes, and yes. Yes to negotiations, yes to normalization, yes to recognition, and yes to mutual interest and mutual assistance. What's the problem? We've got a real problem here, in that we've been following Sudan over the last couple of days, and there is a lot of instability, because remember, the transitional or the provisional government, headed by five military people and five civilians, unelected, just established after these wild riots in 2019, and then the overthrow of Omar al-Bashir, the cruel Islamic dictator. This transitional provisional government saw in Sudan an important opportunity to follow the major powers in the Gulf with Saudi sanction and backing, even though the Saudis are not leading the pack publicly, but they are, what did President Obama say, leading from behind. So the Saudis have been giving their bracha, their blessing, if you will, to these, and the Sudanese wanted to follow that because they are tens of billions of dollars in debt, and that is the primary cry of the public in Sudan, is we can't pay for basic goods, we can't pay for fuel. So the Sudanese provisional government said, hey, this is a great idea. Let's get billions of dollars in the coffer and move forward with the strong horse, which is the United States, this United States government, Israel, and their Gulf allies.
So you're saying, even with the three no's and the significance of that, and I don't believe in coincidences, so I think that's truly historic, as you mentioned. So, but what you're saying, from what I'm hearing you say, is that this deal is actually really more to the benefit of Sudan than it is to Israel.
Well, Josh, it is definitely to the benefit of the Sudanese public. If you look at it from a Western, you know, point of view, where we're building as broad a middle class, a stable middle class as possible, in order to strengthen the economy. If you buy into that idea, I will say that from Israel's point of view, this is an extremely important deal, because let's be very clear about where the weapons shipment and rocket and ammunition shipments were coming from Iran up through Port Sudan. Remember, Israel bombed Port Sudan in 2012, according to foreign news reports, and Iran had been using Port Sudan is a major transfer point for weapons to the Hamas in Gaza. And that was a strategic headache for Egypt and for Israel. So for the Sudanese to be taken off the terror list of the United States and to end its state of bellicosity with Israel, state of war with Israel, is a major thing for Israel, because now it gives Israel a strong strategic foot, diplomatic and security foothold on the Red Sea. You know, we've got Djibouti. We don't have foreign relations, but it's known that we have security relations with Djibouti. And now if we have Sudan and you know, of course, Egypt and Ethiopia and Eritrea all sit right on that Red Sea coast. So it gives us a lot of relative strength and advantage on that, you know, in that area, as well as far off to the east now by the Maghreb, with regard to Arab allies with which we can face off, if necessary, with this messianic nuclearizing Iranian regime on the other side of the Middle East.
So let me ask you then, you mentioned the military aspect, the strategic aspect, security aspect. Another topic in the news these days is a potential U.S. sale of the F-35s to the United Arab Emirates. And a lot of people are perhaps upset at the prime minister, saying he did it without their knowledge. I'm talking about the defense minister and others. But that being said, are you concerned from where you're sitting in terms of a potential sale of the F-35, most advanced aircraft in the world, to the UAE? Was that a legitimate, was that a necessary price to pay, if in fact that is the deal between Israel and the UAE in terms of normalization?
There is a price to normalization. I think that was sort of the underlying question behind your question, is that what is the price of normalization?
Exactly.
It's a very good question, Josh. And there is a price of normalization. You know, people say, Josh, that Israel, paid dearly for this deal with the United Arab Emirates, specifically because of the F-35, the understood sale. And there are a couple things to say. One, this was negotiated by the closest and strongest friend that of any U.S. administration that Israel has ever known. Number two, military planners here and in the West know that there are different types of F-35s with different types of technologies and different types of capabilities. Point number three, it's going to be between 7 and 10 years before the F-35s, if they are delivered, are going to be delivered. And point number four is that Israel and the United States have an ironclad agreement about something called Israel's Qualitative Military Edge, QME, which is a Pentagon to Israel Ministry of Defense agreement that the United States will always guarantee Israel's qualitative military edge over all of its neighbors in the Middle East. And you know, that is an evergreen arrangement, and that will take a lot of very close discussions and negotiations between friends, and the United States and Israel are clearly the greatest of friends. Now, what will happen if there's a change? Alternate Prime Minister Gantz, who's the defense minister, was just in Washington discussing this very deal and these very principles and issues that I'm discussing with you now. So it's clear that it's a sensitive issue, and it's clear that one that Israel and the United States will have to work out very, very, very clearly. But there is going to be a price of normalization. There's no question about that. And there's little question that the Arab states are already receiving Israeli know-how, defense know-how. We don't know, you know, we're not there. We don't know exactly what defense technology and defense software and know-how, you know, intellectual property Israel is sharing with the Gulf, but they're definitely sharing because we have a common enemy, and that's the mullahs in Tehran. So we will, you know, you raise a very important issue that is a show in and of itself, is what is the price versus the prospective benefit of what they call in Arabic tatbiya, a normalization. And this is a concept that neither you nor I nor anyone in Israel has really had to deal with since Israel was born, you know, in 1948, 72 years ago. But now we have to deal with it. It's a real serious strategic issue.
No doubt. And one last question before we let you go, Dan. Other countries who are rumored to be next in terms of signing normalization deals, do you have any information in terms of which countries we're talking about, who they are, and how soon do you think we're going to get some of those deals done? The president of the United States said we have more on the way. I believe he said it just again the other day, 3 to 5, if not more, Arab or Muslim nations potentially signing deals with Israel. Who are we talking about, and how soon are we going to see this happen? Last question.
There are four countries that are in play, and those four countries, according to news reports, analyst reports, and so on, are Oman, Morocco, Saudi Arabia itself, and even Lebanon. And Lebanon is probably the most complex because Lebanon has really become the eternal prison mistress of the Iranian-backed Hezbollah. I think that the Lebanese, certainly the more amenable to the West powers in Lebanon, like Saad Hariri, who was just reelected and who's a Saudi, who's heavily backed by the Saudis, would be interested in weakening the Iranian Hezbollah chokehold over Lebanon. But Oman and, and even some say, you know, Qatar is very is still very problematic because it's dancing in many different weddings at the same time. But what I'm understanding is that the Saudis are waiting to see if President Trump is reelected. And if he is, they're looking, you know, perhaps to make a major announcement. But whether he or Vice President Biden becomes the president of the United States, it's clearly a Saudi urgency to work closely with Israel. They're clearly going to use it vis-a-vis the United States to the best of their advantage. But whoever wins, even if President Trump does not win, what has been established in the region, Josh, as you have, you know, when the Land of Israel Network was established some years ago, we've been watching for the last 7 or 8 years, since you and I worked together back in 2011, 2012, is that the cat is out of the bag, to quote it over as the cliche, or the Arab world has come out of the closet. They are with Israel. Israel is the strong horse in the Middle East today. Israel is no longer targeted as the problem of the Middle East. They are now being praised and bolstered and celebrated as the Middle East solution regarding security and stability opposite an ascendant, nuclearizing, and extremely dangerous Iranian regime, the leading supporter of international terror in the world.
Dan Diker, director of the Project on Political Warfare at the Jerusalem Center of Public Affairs, a good friend. Thank you for your expert analysis. Always great to have you on the show explaining things. We are truly in historic times, and I'm sure we're going to talk again when some of these other deals bear fruit here in the near future. Very, very interesting with everything going on, and of course with the pandemic playing its role in all of this as well. So I want to thank you for your time. People, you should follow Dan Diker on Twitter, and I think you're on Facebook as well, Dan?
Yeah, Twitter, I'm at Dan Diker 84. That's when I graduated from university, so it's easy to remember, at Dan Diker 84. And then you can get in touch with me if you'd like at diker@jcpa.org. And keep listening to the Land of Israel Network. It's a brave new world out there, and a lot of opportunity that I hope that Israel and its neighbors will now take together. Josh, thank you very much.
I'm into that. Thanks so much. Stay safe. Stay healthy. All the best. And
God bless. Thank you.
We are going to take. We're not going to take a short break because this is actually part two of my show today. So if you missed any of this. Any of my interview with Dan, or if you missed part one, you can go back to the Land of Israel Network. You can go to SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, all these other sources in order to get not only my show, but all the other shows here at the Land of Israel Network. So I am signing out for Monday, October 26th, 2020. Thanks for those of you watching on Facebook. This segment of the program, the 8th of Cheshvan 5781, coming to you from just outside the old city walls in Jerusalem. Hope you're safe. Hope you are well. Get in touch with me during the week. Josh@thelandofisrael.com, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Everyone out there, be safe. That's the most important thing these days. Be healthy, be safe, and we'll talk to you next week. All the best.